Good morning. I have the pleasure of sharing with you a little experience from Canada. And it's just that, it's an experience. It's not the definitive experience, it's not the end of the story, it's the beginning of a story. But I just wanted to pick up first, before we start, on one theme that is running throughout everything that we've heard this morning. And it has to do with learning. And really, you know, what we're hearing is that a tremendous learning curve is ramping up. In that, we've heard from the international, from the science community, there has had to be an emergence towards consensus. They're learning about how to do that. We've heard about the international agencies and governments of the world that are learning to cooperate and to consult. We're learning from the Baha'i international community. Before it comes out and pontificates on statements and this is the Baha'i position, it very wisely engages with these people and it learns from them. So this sense of learning is a dominant theme that really underlies everything that we're trying to do as a Baha'i community. So we're learning to apply the teachings of the revelation of Baha'u'llah to these global problems. So there's, with great humility, I think these international leaders, the scientific community, the Baha'i international community, these agencies at the United Nations are all embarked in this. And we have to remember that this is a tremendous undertaking, but that it is governed by this sense, this overwhelming sense of learning. With that comes humility. So let me share with you a little story about Canada. It has to do, of course, with Arthur. Because all things related to this subject for me either come back or begin with Arthur. Several conversations, he's introducing me to this idea of the International Environment Forum. It all sounds very interesting. I decide, 10 years ago, to become a member of it, and I do nothing with it. I sit on it year by year, we're having more interaction. The International Environment Forum is looking for a place to host its country. It contacts the National Spiritual Assembly of Canada, who turns to myself and to a colleague of mine, Susie Tamas, who works in our external affairs area, and says, "What do you think?" And we say, "It sounds mostly harmless. We could probably do something, but I mean, it's just a logistical question. We'll put together a space. The International Environment Forum will come, and we will have an event." Well, this is my shameless plug for the International Environment Forum. For all of you who are working in the area of the environment, who, whether you are scientists or whether whatever level that you're working in sustainable development, you may wish to consider becoming a member of the International Environment Forum. And for your ease of reference, there is the web address. So, the invitation is extended, and in our naivete, we're thinking that the International Forum will come and do unto us something. Well, they write to us and say, "So what's the program?" And we're going, "What? We've got you a space. Please bring your people and do what you do." And they said, "No, this is an opportunity for you to create a space to begin a conversation from different perspectives on the subject of the ethical dimensions of climate change." So quite literally, we begin looking, who in the Baha'i community do we have? And we find it's a very short list. So we get on to Googling who's out there, and we discover a phenomenal wealth of people. So we put together a seminar. And this seminar is entitled Responding to Climate Change, Scientific Realities, Spiritual Imperatives. And we invite a whole host of people from different perspectives, from faith perspectives, from no faith perspectives, from the scientific community, from government, from different levels of government. We invite Aboriginal leaders in the area because we know that the Aboriginal communities that live in Nunavut are on the front lines of the impact of climate change. As the ice melts, their entire way of life is threatened. So we're looking to these people. We're finding people from civil society. And lo and behold, the program ultimately becomes one of clearly a majority of people who are of different perspectives. And there's just a few Baha'is who are there to contribute. So this really becomes a very wonderful learning opportunity. And of course, we're taking our cues from the Baha'i International Community's experience with its programs on the ethical dimensions, on exploring the ethical dimensions of climate change. So we put together a web page, and I want to give you this web access because every single session, the PowerPoint presentations, the presentations, we filmed it all, and it's all available on YouTube. And you know, YouTube has like a 9 or 10 minute maximum. So at 9 minutes, we stopped one camera and we posted that immediately. So we were able to have an online e-conference, and we had people from 25 nations around the world following what was going on at this session in Ottawa. One of the people that we invited was Dr. John Stone, who, how lovely was this? He's a professor at a local university in Ottawa. He accepts, he's a scientist, but he also happens to be the vice chair of the IPCC that won the Nobel Prize that year. And in fact, he learned of the award on the day of his presentation at our conference. So if there's ever a doubt about sort of the divine hand is really orchestrating things, this was one of those moments where you humbly sit back and go, thank you. Outcomes. What happened as a result of this? There were several things. Clearly, the presentation or the opportunity for collaboration with the BIC with some of the speakers became an opportunity. There has been some continuity with that. But more importantly was this public space that was created to explore the issues and to explore this question of the moral imperative. And again, I mentioned this coming together of people and perspectives. But the whole thing was learner-centered. There was no one who was trying to claim understanding. It really was a space. And one of the things that was so interesting for me was that the scientific community, the members that were there, were so appreciative to have a space where they were not limited to debating the science of climate change, but were actually afforded an opportunity to look at the science, but also embrace the question of what are the ethical and moral implications that this most challenging issue for us has. But one of the things that happened at the end of this conference was, and it was, I mean, it was kind of planned, but perhaps it was a little more overwhelming than we thought of initially, was people wanting to do something. Take action, personal action plans, etc. Well, one of the things that came out of it was that the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of Canada decided to write a letter. And it decided to write a letter to all of the Baha'i councils, the local spiritual assemblies, and the registered groups. And I'm going to read part of that letter for you. It says, the resulting conference report and recommendations stimulated the National Spiritual Assembly's consideration of ways in which the day-to-day life of the Baha'i community can better reflect the Baha'i teachings on humanity's sacred responsibility to safeguard the environment. As long ago as RISVA in 1989, the Universal House of Justice said that assisting in endeavors to conserve the environment in ways which blend with the rhythm of life of our community must assume more importance in Baha'i activities. Sorry. Far from distracting from the processes of growth underway in Canada, those processes of growth being obviously the advancement of a cluster from one phase to the next, the institute process, the intensive programs of growth. That's when we talk about these processes of growth, that's what we're making reference to. Far from distracting from the processes of growth underway in Canada, attention to environmental practices that respect the earth and the oneness of its inhabitants must support and sustain them. Thus, small initiatives should be undertaken to gradually increase consciousness of our ecological footprint and develop capacity for responsible action that responds to the challenges of global climate change. The National Assembly, therefore, now raises a call for action, asking all councils, local assemblies, and groups to consider ways to demonstrate ever-increasing sensitivity to environmental issues in the design and implementation of community activities. And we heard earlier that there are 5 million Baha'is on the planet, all involved in core activities. The institute process, the devotional meetings, the junior youth and the spiritual education of children. These are all the core activities, and here we are being invited to lend this understanding. So, and then it goes on and says, larger communities with Baha'i centers should give additional consideration to ways of managing and developing these properties in environmentally sound ways. As Baha'i communities take conscious steps to introduce simple ecologically healthy measures into a vibrant and dynamic community life, they will increasingly demonstrate the truth of these words of the Guardian. We cannot segregate the human heart from the environment outside us and say that once one of these is reformed, everything will be improved. Man is organic with the world. His inner life molds the environment and is itself also deeply affected by it. The one acts upon the other, and every abiding change in the life of man is the result of this, of these mutual reactions. Well, how exciting was that? I mean, how exciting was that? The National Spiritual Assembly is clearly saying that our attention to the question of environmental issues is not a distraction from our work, but in fact needs to be part of the consciousness of how we carry out our core activities. So it just sort of lays it out. And it's interesting because for a lot of people, the environment was like another thing on the agenda. And here the National Assembly was saying, dear friends, it's not another thing on the agenda. It is something that needs to really inform our consciousness in the way we carry out our activities. So, as with many things, a letter is written, it goes out, and the question is, does it go into the void and get lost, or does someone pick it up and do something with it? So I'm going to share with you just a sample of some of the things, some of the actions that were taken by communities and by individuals. The first one is from a community in Ottawa, where the assembly met and it decided it was going to present 9 ways to green our core activities, feasts, and firesides. And it talks about working locally, and it talks about more localized community-based activities. It talks about encouraging sustainable transport, so this idea of carpooling and going on the bikes, etc., to come to activities. It talks about studying the issue, children's classes, junior youth groups, incorporating environmental themes into those programs. It talks about social action and service to the community and getting involved with other agencies. It talks about showing your care by using reusables. So this whole question of putting out to the community, what are the patterns? Are we using reusable materials, or are we using throwaway styrofoam cups, etc.? All of these things become important considerations when you look at the multiplication factors. And then serve local, organic, and fair trade refreshments. Pray about it. This question of incorporating into our devotional meetings educational materials on the environment, on climate change, as part of that process. And then decorate right. I mean, when we're beauty is such an integral aspect of our faith, but we can equally decorate with local flowers as opposed to imported flowers that have been used with pesticides and flown 20,000 kilometers to arrive in our northern climes. And then, of course, the last thing was just a suggestion to go outside. In the summertime, go outside. Hold your activities outside. We don't need to be always locked in. So that's just one community's response. Dozens of communities wrote back, and they said things like, we've adopted a roadside, a highway for a cleanup project. The junior youth have adopted that. It's part of their service activity. And I want to be mindful that everything that's going on is with that outward-looking orientation. So it's not limited to the Baha'i community. It's the Baha'i community's engagement with others, right? So a lot of people wrote in about policy now. They've discontinued the use of paper dishes, plastic cutlery, styrofoam cups. A lot of communities, about half a dozen, wrote back about interfaith or multi-faith activities, specifically on the area of the environment, including Faith in the Common Good, which is a national umbrella organization in Canada of religious organizations that are concerned about environmental issues. One that I loved is this whole question of carpooling. I'll come to it a little later, but one of the communities actually to give an incentive for people coming to the feasts, it said, please carpool or take mass transport, and if you do, your name will be entered into a draw, and you'll be one of 10 people that receives a $10 gift certificate for the local Baha'i bookstore. And they haven't just done it once, they've done it on several times. So there's incentive mechanisms, and it's nice because they're playing with it, right? I mean, they're trying to raise consciousness, but at the same time, they're not trying to burden the friends, right? So there's this whole balance thing that's going on. Again, local, the question that Tahira mentioned about the role of the junior youth groups. We've seen evidence now of youth groups that are involved in community environmental projects, making commitments to plant up to 10,000 trees, to participate in urban community gardens with the idea that the food produced will go to the food banks. We've seen a local spiritual assembly that's actually appointed a task force to educate the community on environmental issues at every feast. So there's a component of the feast that is now dedicated to that. We've seen support for gardening projects. I mentioned that one. And I mentioned the one about the bookstore. We've seen the local assembly asking that proposals that are submitted to the local assembly must include an environmental impact section. I mean, that's really interesting, okay? Paperless meetings. There was one community that wrote back and said that they actually held a post-convention conference as a paperless meeting. So, consultation and community activities that was held specifically to engage youth and junior children and junior youth on the question of the environment and how it should look in the Baha'i community. And a number of communities writing back about a whole variety of different activities that they've been hosting in commemoration of United Nations Days, Nature Day, whatever, as sort of an outreach and extension type activity, and of course, devotional meetings on environmental themes. Just a couple of quick examples. One of them was an eco camp for children, teaches respect for the environment in High River, Alberta. It gets picked up and carried in the local newspaper and online. We see a documentary featuring Faribor Saba and the terraces at the shrine, and its relationship to the environment is picked up on Vision Television. It's going to be broadcast in this coming year. We saw an initiative of the Montreal Baha'i community where it reached out and engaged the youth of Montreal in hosting an event that they called Eco Shift, which is a permanent ongoing activity. They've created a website, and they now have a mission statement, and they have gone full bore into creating a space within the Baha'i infrastructure using the Baha'i centers as a resource to bring people together on to promote conversations and action on issues related to the environment. Friends, that's a quick snapshot of something that came out of one letter. Now, there would have been a second follow-up letter, but then the House of Justice came along with the 41 conferences and our attention got focused on that. Praise God. Because that will add increased momentum as we revitalize our efforts to stay focused on those core activities. Because that becomes the channel for the expression of this type of action. So a part of our learning is that action on the environment is not another thing on the agenda. It is not something that we will do later. It is something that we must learn to do now and to incorporate into the activities that we are already carrying out. I just have a few references, quotations that I'd like to share with you, because it speaks to this question of the relevance of this aspect of social action to the core activities of the five-year plan. It says, when the House of Justice called on Baha'is at the beginning of the five-year plan to open their study circles, children's classes, and devotional meetings to all the inhabitants of the locality, that phrase signalized a change in the culture of Baha'i communities. A change that is intimately linked with the efforts of the faith to grow and to embrace humankind. When Haldor spoke, he said that there's a positive side to this threat of climate change, and that it represents an opportunity for the world to really come together and practice unity. When Baha'u'llah says the earth is one country and mankind its citizens, citizenship comes with responsibility. And as we learn in the context of our communities and in our clusters and in our neighborhoods to organize our core activities, we are creating a space with an outward-looking orientation to also engage people in these processes and to include them and to learn from them on the questions of incorporating issues that are related to the environment. So having an outward-looking orientation also suggests that it is important for Baha'is to understand more deeply the forces operating on the world stage and the solutions offered by the revelation of Baha'u'llah. Our task is to convey to seekers that we are all living in the same world, facing common trials, and striving to fulfill similar long-held aspirations for the human race. Our expressions of solidarity with our fellow human beings must be sincerely voiced and genuinely felt. And this question of the weight of the burden and the fear of climate change, the message of hope that the Baha'i community can interject into that, begs the question, how do we perceive ourselves? Are we a group of religious people that have a nice set of spiritual principles that we kind of keep to ourselves, and maybe every now and again, yes, we're persecuted? And I don't mean that with any disrespect. Or do we perceive of ourselves as social actors, as protagonists to bring about social change on a global scale? And if we perceive of ourselves as these protagonists for social change, the question begs to be asked, how do we do that? And the House of Justice has given us a framework for action. And that framework for action is the core activities. And we see that that focus is absolutely essential, but it does not mean that we cannot introduce in the way we execute our core activities our concerns and our love for the planet. And it does not mean that we cannot involve others with this outward-looking orientation to join us in that process. Central to the capacity of a Baha'i community to lead a process of transformation is the ability of its members and institutions to apply the revelation of Baha'u'llah to various aspects of life and thereby establish consistent patterns of change. The core activities create new habits. In fact, learning to apply the teachings to achieve progress could be taken as the very definition of Baha'i social and economic development. So when we're talking about social action, on that spectrum is engagement with community right through to social and economic development. Such learning has to occur locally, regionally and nationally and internationally, and we've seen that in our presentation today, how the Baha'i community is learning to engage in all of those levels and become the axis around which our development efforts are organized at all levels. So friends, when Baha'u'llah says, be anxiously concerned with the needs of the age you live in and center your deliberations on its exigencies and requirements, this is in fact one of those moments when we are learning to do that. And the exigencies of the age in which we live, let me show just one almost last slide. And I want to talk about an initiative of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in Canada. It's called 1 Million Acts of Green. And there's a broadcaster by the name of George Strombolopoulos, great name. Who's he? He's sort of Canada's answer to Larry King, except he's hip, he's cool, he's a Greek immigrant, and he's 50 years younger. And he has partnered with corporations and mobilized the Canadian community to think about 1 million acts. And friends, when we look at the Baha'i community and we think of 5 million members worldwide and you think of the multiplier effect and the leveraging, this is a dramatic understanding of how individuals can, in fact, create change and sustain that change. My last thought. In the Rizwan message of this year, the House of Justice wrote, as you continue to labor in your clusters, you will be drawn further and further into the life of society around you and will be challenged to extend the process of systematic learning in which you are engaged to encompass a growing range of human endeavors. In the approaches you take, the methods you adopt, and the instruments you employ, you will need to achieve the same degree of coherence that characterizes the pattern of growth presently underway. And what's so exciting about that is that, again, we keep our focus on the process of growth And as we do that and we introduce additional levels of complexity, our concern for the environment becomes a reflection of who we are as these protagonists who are trying to build an ever-advancing civilization. We are engaging with other people in that process. And as that happens, we will find ourselves drawn in to the society, and we'll find that the society is drawn to us. I think that's enough. Thank you.